welcome to the third Rebound Podcast with our guest today, Megan Moore, JMU alum. Excited to have Megan here and still JMU student. So we have lots of life, JMU life experiences here to talk about. So Megan, thanks for joining us.
Ah, thanks, Dr. Miller. I'm so happy to be here. I feel like it was just yesterday when I was here as an undergrad, still here as a grad, but it feels a bit different now, I shall say.
Well, it should. So let's talk about that. So not everyone knows you, although everyone knows you, but not everyone knows you. So can you tell us a little bit about sort of where you're from, when you came to JMU, what you studied, and what you're studying now, and if there's career path in your mind, any of that kind of stuff, anything else you want to share?
Yeah, sure. So first, my name is Megan Moore. I use she, her pronouns. Y'all can call me Meg. I rebranded a few years ago. I went from Megan to Meg in my JMU journey. I am from Bristow, Virginia, so Northern Virginia. I was a communication major in undergrad, and I tried to do music industry as a minor. I will say to all of our listeners right now, I'm sitting in a music like recording studio, so I feel quite at home. Didn't quite get that on my degree afterwards, didn't get a music industry degree, just like one credit short, but I still consider it as my minor. I did communication and music industry kind of, and now here I am right out of undergrad. I graduated in May, and I am in the communication and advocacy program with a health track, which basically means I really want to talk about like women's health and sexuality. I'm kind of going into that route right now, looking towards professorship. I am a graduate assistant as well, so I'm teaching ESCOM 123, and I am loving it, absolutely loving it. So that's kind of who I am, where I'm from, what I'm doing. Yeah.
Okay. So I feel like there's a story with this music industry thing. So let's talk about the journey there, you know, one credit, one class, like talk to us about the communications music industry journey. I also myself was, I think, 6 credits away from a tuba minor when I was an undergraduate here. So
nice, tuba.
I know the pain of that. So talk to me about the music industry almost minor.
Yeah. So I was really involved in musical theater and music growing up. I did lots of shows. I love Broadway. I love all that stuff. And I remember coming to tour JMU and speaking with my parents on the way and them asking me, what is your prospective major? And I said, music. And they said, oh, they said, no. And that's just my parents' perception of it. They're very non-musical people. My dad's an IT, my mom's a teacher, and they don't see that as a direction that you should go in life. Doesn't mean you shouldn't. That's just my parents' take of it is. And they would support me if I chose that, but also I love my parents dearly, and I want to do what makes them happy too, as well as myself. And so I said, okay, well then I will major in something that you are supportive of, and that would be communication. That's a very broad major. And then I'll minor in something like music industry, where I combined, you know, the business side of music with also music. And so I did it, and I loved it, and I worked my way through the classes. Halfway through, the credits changed. Like for the program, you had to get a certain amount of credits that were different than when I started the program as a first year. And so I just couldn't fit it in my schedule anymore. I couldn't fit the required class that I had to take. And so I said, you know what? I had that experience. I took the classes and I had that experience. If it's not actually on my transcript, okay, so what? I still had that experience, and I still took those classes, and that meant more to me than having that title on a piece of paper.
Interesting. So one, I think there's a great lesson for everybody that a degree is what you make of it, and your time here is what you make of it. And you still know all those things, and you experienced all those things and can bring those things into your life, even if they're not a letter or somewhere on your piece of paper on your wall.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love it. Okay. All right, so then let's talk about the decision to go to grad school and to go to grad school at JMU.
Okay.
Can you talk a little bit about sort of that, choosing to go to grad school first, and then the why JMU and how you're feeling about the decision so far?
Yeah. So it was around beginning of junior year where it was like 3 a.m. I was in my room and I was like going over different theories that I'd been learning in class. And I started imagining I was teaching a class. I was imagining that I was teaching this class, like the theories of communication that I was learning. And I just like did that for hours, like hours in my room. And I realized, oh, wait, I really want to be doing this, like for real, right? Not just to imaginary class. And then I thought, well, JMU offers graduate assistantships where you get to teach the first year SCOM 123 classes. And that is involved with the grad program, Communication and Advocacy. Well, I'm also really into women's health and sexuality, and that would be a great area of research to focus in with the advocacy program at JMU. So I started looking into that. I started talking to my professors about it, and they told me pros and cons of JMU's program versus other programs around the country and whatnot. And JMU is a great communication program. It's really unique for grad school. A lot of schools don't have that kind of communication advocacy program. And so I was really looking into that. And then we cannot leave out the important thing that is COVID. And so that hit and I got really comfortable here. And I think I was always comfortable here, but like that, it became really, really my home then of like, this is where I am during a time of struggle and hardship. Like JMU was where I was. And I said, my time is not up yet. Is it because maybe I felt like, you know, a year and a half was taken away from me, maybe, but also it could have been like, it became a part of me. JMU became a part of me then. And so I said, this is where I belong still. And my time is not up yet. And so I applied and it has been, I have loved every single second of it from the day that I started, the day of orientation. I love teaching. I love my classes. I love my cohort. I love my professors and I don't regret it at all.
And not only don't regret it, you love it.
Yeah.
How do you feel about grading papers? How's that going?
It's interesting. The biggest thing that we're grading right now is presentations. And I think coming out of COVID, students are having trouble finding motivation. And that's real. And that's normal and that's valid. And I totally get that. But as an instructor, it's hard to be on the other end and be like, how can I give you points here? How? Because I care for them. And that's the reason why I wanted to become an instructor is because not necessarily am I gung-ho about doing content. I love what I teach, but also I want to teach you how to be a good human being. I want to teach you how to live your best life. And that's where the communication aspect really is helpful. It'd be one thing if I was teaching like physics, which yeah, right. Like I could ever do that. But you know, it's hard to teach someone how to have their best quality of life in a physics classroom versus a communication classroom where we live, sleep, breathe, eat communication.
Sure. I will say a physics grad student would probably argue that with you, but
you'll have a physics student next time and I'll listen to the podcast and we'll compare.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So being a grad student at JMU after going to JMU. Mm. So let's first talk about the school part. You talked about some of it loving and all that, but what's the difference for you of grad school sort of school and classes and all that versus undergrad? Like, is there a difference? Is it the same? Do you feel different about it? Are you motivated differently? Is it the same? I don't know.
So there are a couple of different parts here. School-wise, class-wise, grad school is very discussion-oriented. You read the articles and then you sit and you have like really in-depth discussions that leave you exhausted afterwards. It's like burdensome to do these things, but it's where real learning occurs, truthfully. You know, there's no more small 5-point assignments, things like that. It's you discuss the articles and then you write a huge paper at the end of the semester. And I love this way of learning. I really do. That's, I think, the biggest difference school-wise. I think student-wise, I was really, really, really involved in undergrad. I was in so many extracurriculars. I did so many things, and walking around campus is different now, right? It's different. It's different feeling like I'm not a part of the orgs anymore. It feels like I'm still involved in it so much a part of me, but at the same time, it's like I'm distanced from it. And that's a weird feeling. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's stay there for a minute. Talk about, because you didn't really say as much of this. I think you were being humble in your intro. I was involved a lot. So what are you a member of or now an alum of on this campus?
student ambassadors. I was on the executive board for student ambassadors. I was involved in Make Your Mark on Madison. I was a participant, a leadership counselor, and then student director for that. And then I also was a part of College Mentors for Kids. I was the vice president of that as well.
So then let's stay here a little bit though, because I think especially because a lot of people do what you're doing, where they stay here after undergrad and go to grad school. And I think it's important to talk about that. It is great in lots of ways, but also it's challenging because you're here, and I'm sort of trying to parse your words here. You're here and you see it, but you're not really a part of it. And you don't want to try to be a part of it because that might feel weird for them and for you. And you're trying to let the people that are there still run it. So just talk about how are you managing that? And you know, maybe you're managing it in a way that you're struggling, but can you talk more about, because I know you came to my mom that one night to sort of be there, but I mean, how are you managing that? You're here, but you're apart, but you're also separate.
I don't know. Like I'm actively doing that. I'm going to events that I feel like I can come to. I go to my mom every Monday. I go to student ambassador events, things like that. But it's like, my time is over in regards to that. I'm not a part of the executive board. I'm not making decisions anymore. And that's hard for me because I'm someone who wants to have control. I'm someone who wants to be so in it 110%. And I have friends that I'm like, this is maybe what you should be doing. But I'm like, Megan, stop. Like, your time is over there now. Let fresh perspectives come in and let them guide and let them lead and whatnot. So it's hard to navigate because I still feel like that's a part of me, but I need to let go. And I think that's part of just being a Duke is like, there's a time and a place where you are so involved in it and it will always be a part of you. But then it's like, you need to realize when it's like time to let go.
And I'm going to challenge you a little, because I wonder if it's time to let go or is it just time to loosen your grip a little bit? You know, I mean, you're always going to be a member of those groups and those communities, and you're woven into the fabric of those. Like when I think about your time here as an undergraduate, like I knew you as an undergrad for 3 years, like you're woven into those groups. And I think that we have this, like, oh, you've graduated, get over it, move on. You know, you're an alum now, stop. But I don't know that you have to let go as much as maybe loosen your grip or change your relationship with it. You know, you're not standing in the front of my mom, but you're sitting in the back and you're watching and you're around, and your friends that are there feel very supported by you. That's not letting go, but I think that's changing your relationship with it.
I like that choice of words. I like the change the relationship point of view, because like I said earlier, it's difficult for me, like in my mind, to think I'm not in control anymore. And that's the relationship that needs to change. Okay, I can still be a part of it and I can still have a relationship and engage with extracurriculars or organizations and whatnot, but I need to change the relationship in my head of like, let other people then do this. Like, you had your time doing this, let other people step in and do it now. I laid the foundation. I set, you know, I let them kind of, you know, then go off and do what they need to do with it. But also I can still be a part of it in a way that's just different than before. Like you said, I like that. And I think like I said earlier, I'm just navigating that now. I'm trying to understand my position and my relationship with those organizations that I love so much and will always be a part of me, but it's hard. It is hard.
Yeah. So let's stay here a little longer. How have you, or have you been able to find new things? You know, it's only been almost like what, 8-9 weeks total. You know, 'cause you're still here and you still have those other things. Like, have you been able to find sort of Meg's next set of things, or are you still searching for those? And what does that look like for you? I don't know. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I don't like change. I don't like change at all. And so I don't want to find new things right now. That's the reality of it. I love how my life has progressed into like grad school and talking with new people and whatnot. But it's like, I don't want to find this whole new hobby or whole new thing in grad school, because I love what my life was and I love what my life is. And I don't want to let go of that. I don't want to. So it's hard for me to be like, oh yes, I'm going to go to student organizer, like do all these things where it's like, you know, am I still allowed to do that? Like, you know, am I, as a grad student, is it normal to be involved in that kind of stuff? Because my perception of grad school is it's you just go to school and that's it. But I think JMU as an institution, not just in undergrad, but grad as well, everyone, you are involved. You're involved, you're engaged, you're doing things that benefit you as a person, and you're doing things that benefit the community and the world around you. And just because I'm not an undergrad doesn't mean that I can't do that. I can still do those things, but I'm learning. I'm learning to progress and find those things and change my habits because I'm changing as a person as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think I mentioned this to you before. I mean, I graduated from here and then I got a job here and I stayed here for 4 years with work and then my master's. And I remember I kept coaching women's club soccer that I coached when I was a senior. And then I started to advise my fraternity and then those types of things. And I remember after my first year, when I lived with a bunch of randoms, I then lived with undergrads because that's who I knew. You know, and I remember they were wanting to do very non-professional adult people things in the apartment all the time. I'm like, guys, I work here. I can't lose my job.
Right.
So can you talk about like that part of life? Like, how do you, like, I don't know who you're living with. You don't have to out them, but you know, how did you decide who to live with? How did you sort of think through where to live? Are you still living in what would be traditionally off-campus student housing? Did you go, you know, so talk through those choices for me, if you don't mind.
This is something that I've really been trying to reflect on and settle with. And it's because I am currently living with the same roommates that I have been since sophomore year. They are here for grad school. They're going to be here one more year because they're in the education program, the accelerated masters. And they're like the last cohort to do that. But I'm here for two more years. So what's going to happen after this year is they're going to leave me and JMU is going to look a lot different to me once they're gone. JMU to me is the people, right? And so some of my people who make up what JMU is to me, they're not going to be there. And my perspective is absolutely going to shift. And I'm so incredibly nervous for that. That's the thing that I think I'm most nervous for. That sense of familiarity, that comfort that they've given me. One of these girls I've been best friends with for 11 years. And so it's like, what is my life going to look like after that? That is so darn scary. And I see myself like walking around the apartment. On Thursdays, they all have class and I'm home alone usually because I don't have class. And I've been like sitting in this feeling of like, is this what it's going to feel like after they're gone? The apartment's empty. Like half of that, the stuff in the apartment is theirs. Like, what is it going to look like? Am I even going to be in this apartment? Do I even want to be in this apartment after they're gone? That is so scary to me. And so it's like the transition from undergrad to grad in that aspect was not any different because I lived with the same people and we were able to navigate that shift together because we were growing together. Aside from them, I'm still friends with people who I was friends with in undergrad, very close with them. But I see the difference. I see the difference in me going to grad classes and not being involved in extracurriculars and them being involved. And it's like retrospectively looking at my involvement in organizations and whatnot. Like, I feel like I have this perspective now that's different than when you're in the thick of it. And so I kind of want to shake them and be like, this is what it's like. Why are you doing this? But you just have to live the experience. You know, you have to live it to then learn. And I've realized that. And I've realized that like as much as advice as I can give, you got to let your younger friends who are still in undergrad, like just do their thing and live their own experience. And then they'll realize after the fact, or maybe they won't, who knows. But I don't even know if that answers your question, Dr. Miller, but I'm trying to navigate with the same people that I love, that I've grown through undergrad and grad with, trying to navigate what my life is going to look like outside of them. And that's scary and confusing. And ask me in a year how I'm doing and how I'm going to navigate that, because I really don't know what that's going to look like as of right now.
Yeah. But I guess what I would say to you, Meg, is that, and I'm going with Meg now, right? Because we've changed. That was the transition.
Rebranded. Yes. Thank you, Dr. Okay,
great. Rebrand. Meg, is everything you just said feels so normal to me for what people figure out as they leave college, whether they do grad school, whether they go somewhere new and, you know, start a job, whether they move home, you're in that. Someone said this to me the other day, is it's your next freshman year. You're living your next freshman year, because you are starting over and you're in a brand new world. Even though you're in the same world, it's, if you think about it, like the whole fishbowl concept, like you're still a fish, but it's a different bowl, even though it looks exactly like it did before. And that's such a normal thing that I think people don't realize when they graduate, is you're starting over again, just like you did if you were in like my high school, like you did in ninth grade, like you did in sixth grade when you were in middle school, like you did in first grade, and like you did when you were in 13th grade when you came to JMU, that this is just another first year for you.
I have been talking to friends who made the choice to not go to grad school and go out into the workforce and do their whole thing. And gosh, they are like, it is real. We go from doing the same thing every day for 4 or 5 years, however long you're here, the same people, the same professors, and the same schedule, to, oh my gosh, what is the real world right now? And it's scary, and it's scary, and you're learning all over again. You're a first year all over again, but in a such different bowl.
Yeah.
And that feeling of like imposter syndrome of like, oh my gosh, am I worthy? I just went 4 years and got this degree in this amazing place, and I feel so smart and I feel so worthy. And then you get into it and you're like, oh my gosh, what did I even learn for the past 4 years to get me to this place? That is so real. And I felt that way going to grad school too. And that was even right, like that sense of familiarity of academia for me is like so comfortable, but I even felt that here. And so I can't even imagine how folks feel when they go off and they do jobs that are so different than the JMU experience. Like that's so real. And I think that's part of the reason why I even chose grad school, was because that it was that easy transition for me.
But you're also selling yourself short, because it hasn't been that easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Well,
it's different. I mean, I just think it's different. And so let's go back to the first part of this transition and graduation. Mm. Because I'm hoping that a lot of our current seniors are going to hear this and think about their own journey. And you had a COVID journey. They're having a COVID journey that's still here. And, you know, I think you all, you know, it cleared up just enough for you all to actually have graduation. You know, the hope is that for this next class and 2022, it'll be even more clear. But can you just talk about sort of the days before, during, and right after graduation, and sort of what that was like for you?
I tried to make an agenda, make a schedule, make a bucket list of everything that we were going to do before graduation. Didn't happen.
The list or the things?
Both. Both didn't happen. And I am glad it happened that way, because it was supposed to happen that way. And I think we make a huge deal of all of these things that we're supposed to do before we graduate, or it's supposed to go this exact certain way and supposed to be perfect. And you're supposed to wear the perfect dress and, you know, have the perfect makeup when you're walking across Bridgeworth Stadium. But it's like, graduation itself is, yes, it's great to have a ceremony and it's the culmination of it all, but that's not what it's about. You know, you reflect on your past 4 years or however long you're here. And that's what it's about. Like the experiences that you have the past 4 years, not necessarily actual graduation. And it took me a while to realize that. But once I became present in everything that I did, everything changed for me mentally. I made sure that I was so engaged and so present in being with my people, knowing this could be one of the last times I saw them before they graduated, or things were going to change drastically in a few weeks. So just let's be present in the moment. You're a big advocate for this. Let's put our phones away when we're on the table, when we're sitting at a table. Let's just be here with each other. Let's be here. And that is so important. And when you're there with your people and their body and mind and soul and everything else, like you can't ask for anything else. You can't. And so on graduation day, I woke up and I said, if the party and if this and that doesn't go how I planned, it doesn't matter, because I'm here and I'm living it. And that was the most important thing to me. So then, you know, you graduate and the ceremony happens and then you're like, well, what do we do now? You know? And so what we did was we were still present with each other. I was present with my friends. We hung out, we celebrated, and we said, all right, well then that's that. Let's do it all over again in the fall, you know? So it's those kinds of things where it's like, you might plan all these things. You might have a schedule. You might have an agenda. You might have a bucket list, and that's fun and that's great. And if that's you, go ahead and do that. But my biggest advice and what I ended up doing was just being present. And that's really important to me.
And I feel like that's so hard because we're so distracted. And I know you know this, that I talk about this all the time, but I think that I was actually going to ask you at the end what your advice was for people. And I feel like you just already dropped it. So we'll hold on to that and maybe reflect back on that at the end. But the concept of being present in the moment of those few days, I think it's a good piece of advice for every day. But when you think about those last few days you have with those friends, because I'm sure all your friends did not stay here.
Right.
Who graduated, right? Someone off and worked. And this was your last, you know, not to be depressing, but this is your last moment like this with them. You know, you might not be together with that whole group maybe ever, or maybe, you know, might be 5 years, could be 20 years, could be never. And I really appreciate that very like mature perspective of that moment versus like, let's just do all the stuff instead of let's just be with each other, I think is so great.
Yeah. Like, you know, it was, we're like, okay, well, we have to go to this restaurant and this place downtown, like all of these places. And it's like, okay, great. Let's do these things. But to be quite honest, like, I just want to sit in the apartment and watch a movie and reflect on us meeting each other for the first time, you know, our first year here. Like, let's reflect. That's my biggest thing is reflection, journaling and just talking out loud to yourself. And, you know, as like, I always, when I'm going to sleep at night, I always like think about my day and the great things that happened, the challenges that happened. And I made sure to do that, not just when I was going to sleep at night, but like literally in the moment, practicing self-reflexivity in the moment was really important. And I think it leads to more happiness and just overall like engagement in life, like a quality in life when you practice that.
Yeah. So let's do one more piece here and let's go back into, and it could be now if you have something from this year, but could be your undergrad, whatever, over the last 4.5 or so years. I want to talk about sort of a rebound story, a challenge or a struggle that led to incredible lessons and opportunities or just loss or whatever. But one of the things that we're really trying to focus here is that struggle is part of life. Challenge is part of life, that I've always felt like if you're not struggling, then you're not trying hard enough. So I'm wondering if you can maybe pinpoint a moment or a scenario or a decision or something that didn't go the way you had hoped or, you know, turned on you or whatever you want to call it, and sort of how you rebounded or overcame that over time and sort of how you look back on that now. Mm-hmm. Is that something you're willing to do?
Sure, absolutely. I love this. So I will tell you the reason why Megan became Meg. That is this story. So I came into college. I grew up with the same people from, you know, kindergarten to 12th grade, like same people, same, you know, town and whatnot. And I was really, really bullied, like really bullied for most of my life. And I was really insecure because of it, like really insecure about my physical appearance, my personality, everything, right? And so when I came to college, I said, this is a fresh start for me. This is a fresh start to be able to get away from those people, to be able to be who I want to be. But the reality is the insecurity doesn't leave when you leave high school. The insecurity doesn't leave when you switch towns or move. That stayed with me. So I came into college still with this insecure mindset of like, imposter syndrome. Like, am I worthy of being here? Are people going to like me? I have to wear the exact right outfits and do all of these things just to impress people. And so I wouldn't even, you know, leave my residence hall without like a makeup on because I cared so much about what people thought of me. And I didn't want the nicknames and the bullying to be a thing in college. You know, I didn't want that. So I stayed with this mindset of like, people aren't going to like me if I don't try to please them and all of these things, because I just wanted so badly to leave that insecure girl behind. I ended up just engaging in behaviors that weren't in line with my values my first year, because I tried so hard to be someone who I wasn't, to get away from that insecurity, shy, timid girl. And as I started to come into myself, you know, sophomore year, I expanded, I joined extracurriculars, that kind of thing. And I started to realize, like, I'm this leader who has this perspective of like treat people with kindness, all of these things that I learned growing up, that I can now help my community, help JMU with treating others with kindness. And it's not about how you look and all of these things, because I have a perspective and I didn't have to engage in all of those behaviors that I was ashamed of at the time. I didn't have to do that to be this new person. I could be who I wanted to be just by being a leader and by being a good friend and by being a good daughter and by being a good student, all of these things. And I started to come into myself and I started to gain confidence. And that's when I started to really, really be engaged in my extracurriculars, and I became vice president and student director and all of these things. And people started coming up to me and saying, like, I'm so impressed by you. Like, you have so much confidence. And this was the first time in my life where anyone told me, like, you have so much confidence. And so then the same person who kept telling me that, he referred to me as Meg. And he kept, like, calling me Meg. And I was like, I like that. And it might have just been because he also said that I was really confident and he really liked me and whatnot. And like the person I was becoming, but I liked being Meg. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to rebrand, not just my name as Meg, but I'm going to rebrand as this like wholehearted, 110% present, 110% there for the people who I love and for this community and for JMU. And I'm going to be Meg, and I'm going to be this person who I've always wanted to be. And finally, like, here I am. And so then I became Meg, like, junior year. And ever since then, I have been authentically and genuinely me. And I think that JMU and the people around me really, really helped me become that person. And I'm really proud of the person who I am today. And Megan, the person who I was growing up and in high school and who was bullied and all that, yes, like, she's still very much a part of me, but she's the foundation. But now I've flourished, I've blossomed into Meg, like the leader, Meg, like the graduate assistant, Meg, like the best friend, the daughter, the sister, who I'm really, really proud of, the leader, like Meg, the leader.
So I'm wondering, I mean, it's great. I mean, I'm like, I need something to follow up on that's as good as that story. And I don't know if I have one. I guess I'm just wondering what that journey, like, now looking back on it, it sounds like you're just really proud of the journey that you took to get there. And I think that's good. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just wondering, where does that, like, what's next in the journey of Meg from that sort of what it felt like in high school and those struggles and sort of the trying to make everyone happy when you started, and then that one person. I also wonder, I'm going to bet, and you're going to not like this, but I'm going to say it anyway, that you've been that person for lots of people, that you've sort of helped them make that turn and that feeling about themselves. And you won't answer that, and it's fine, you don't have to, but I think you have been. And I think that's sort of your gift to people. So I'm just wondering, like, now looking back, like, what's Meg's next step on her journey in that sort of confidence and being a servant leader, as I would call you, to other people, and being fully in yourself and comfortable in your own skin.
Well, I went from Megan, now I'm Meg. Maybe like one day I'll be M or something. Meh. Yeah. I don't know if you can shorten it anymore. But anyway, I think you touched on it a little bit. I think once you become fully yourself and you like grow into yourself, then you tell other people, like, you inspire them to do that as well. And I think that's what I'm striving to do every single day. And that could be taxing and burdensome. I will say that it can be, but it's also so incredibly rewarding. And I think that's what I strive to do every single day, right? Is I get up and I say, who am I going to touch today? What lives am I going to touch today? How am I going to help people live their best quality of life and be who they are? And the past couple of days, I've really, really been trying with a few folks. And it's hard because it's not instant. It's not instantaneous, right? Like you have conversations and you try to say, like, wake up, like, this is my experience, like that kind of thing. And it doesn't happen. And people are hard and people are going to make their own choices. You can't make choices for others, but little by little, you plant the seed. That's what I'm doing. You're planting seeds. And I'm seeing over the course of a couple months and you know, maybe even a year now with some people who I've really been trying to help out, you see it happen little by little. And my roommates are education majors. They're teachers, and my mom's a teacher, and they're all telling me right now how difficult it is to work with kids, especially right now coming out of COVID. And you're trying to teach them all of these things, but you can't teach them all of the things in 1 or 2 weeks. You plant seeds, and it's the little things that they're seeing, you know, the small, like writing their name, the small, like they're sitting on the carpet without, you know, acting out, having a tantrum, all of these things. And it's like, I view that the same way with like leadership, is you can't tell everybody all of the things to be a leader in a few weeks and expect them to follow through. They make their own choices. They have their own personal lives, all of these things. But you plant the seeds, and little by little, you see improvement, and little by little, you see them come into themselves. And it is just a fantastic feeling when you see that light bulb go off in their head of like, oh my gosh, like I'm doing it. I'm okay. And then in turn, they start doing that for other people. And it's just a cycle. It's a cycle. It's a wave. And that's really, really inspiring for me to think that like I could make that change. So that's what my next steps are. That's what I always am striving to do. And it's difficult, like I said, but that's the journey for me.
Well, let's wrap up with one more thing. And I'm going to tell you what I'm going to ask you and then spin a little bit so you have time to think about it. But I really, as a person who loves gardening as one of my favorite pastimes, I get made fun of all the time because I work so late. I often garden with a headlamp on at night in my yard waiting to get arrested because people think I'm breaking into my own house. But I want to ask you about what's one last seed you want to leave with the people that hear this podcast? Like what's one thing you want to let the present is already there. That's really great. I think that that was such a gift, that sense of being present with people. But I wanted to see if there's one more seed you want to leave with folks that are listening to this, that when they finish that, they're like, oh my God, that is so with me. And I'm going to hold on to that and make that grow. And because I really do think that you've lived a really interesting path and journey here. And I know you have one, but I hate put you on the spot, but I feel like there's a thing there that you want to drop on us as our last seed to leave with everybody.
Comparison is the thief of joy. I have learned through my leadership journey that the strengths that I bring to the table are going to be a lot different than other fantastic leaders and vice versa. I worked with a beautiful, fantastic, kind, incredible woman named Sarah Welch, who now has moved to Salamanca, Spain. She's in grad school there. And I was a student director for Make America Madison with her. And she is just a fantastic leader. And at this point in my leadership journey, when I worked with her, I was very much confident in my leadership skills, and I knew myself very well, but I saw her leadership and I couldn't help to feel less than, because she was such a fantastic leader and she was so good at things that I'm not necessarily good at. But I practiced mindfulness. I practiced reflection. And I said, Megan, you know, I am bringing so many strengths to the table that make us such a good pair and make us such a good team. And so I stopped comparing myself to her. And that really was the contributor to the success of our program, of our partnership, and then made me grow as a leader. And I acknowledged the areas that I needed to grow on, right? I needed to work on because of her. And I enlisted her in that vision and I had her help me with that. And I realized I will never be as quote unquote good at that kind of stuff. Like, right. Like oh, she's so good at like technology things and like that, like she's so good under pressure and I'm not, but like, that's okay. That's okay. That's not my strength, but I know that I also bring things to the table as a leader that's what makes me a great leader, like those certain strengths. And then obviously that quote, comparison is a thief of joy, runs deep as far as like body image and all of that kind of stuff too, right? But I won't bore you with that conversation. But, you know, to sum up, right, like you are worthy of being a leader. You are worthy of being a fantastic, wonderful person, and be confident in the strengths that you hold, not necessarily, you know, what others have that you don't.
And I think that my theme for this in the end, Meg, as I hear you talk, is that you are worthy, period. You are, people listening to this are, people should be allowed to see their worth and not question it. And I really appreciate those gifts and seeds that you've left with us. This has been an amazing conversation. So I appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Maybe we'll have you come back again year two and see how year two is going.
I would love that. I'm sure it's going to be very different. Thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no problem. Well, everyone, this was the Rebound Podcast with Meg Moore. Excited to have Meg with us. First year graduate student here at JMU and a JMU undergraduate alum. Tune in next time for our next guest. Take care and have a great day, everybody.
Rebound. 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 Rebound.